get started. We've been doing a lot of things with the rotation, and it's very important in the rotation thing that you get very comfortable with the right-hand rule. And I know I'm up here sort of doing this. It might be a little hard to tell what I'm doing. But you do want to figure it out one way or the other. So I have sort of three different drawings that perhaps you see better than you see on hand. I don't know. I'm not sure about this one. It looks pretty hard to see. But there are sort of different ways of looking at the right-hand rule. Well, two of them are sort of the same. Here is A and B. They're in the plane that is sort of perpendicular to the board, if you want to think about it. You put your hand, your fingers along the first vector, and you curl them in the plane that joins those two in the direction that goes from A to B, where that angle is the smallest. So it doesn't mean you do it that way, it means you go that way. So that your hand sort of does this. And your thumb then is pointing in the direction of the cross product. It's a right angle for the two vectors. It's right angles for the plane that joins those two vectors. Here's another way of looking at where you're doing the cross product between U and V. So here your fingers are extending along U and V. And note that if you just say put your fingers along U, you have any orientation you want. So you have to have this whole idea of having those fingers rotating in the plane that joins those two vectors. Okay? And then here's another way of doing it where you sort of just do this. You make coordinates with your right hand. And I don't know, this may help a little bit. The standard coordinate system that you grow up using, where when you draw it, you have X going that way and Y going up and Z coming out of you. That's a right-handed coordinate system. If you take S, X, and you cross it into Y, you get Z. Okay? So that may also help you remember it. I put on the class website some new applets, if I can get them to work. One is a page of applets, some of which you might find useful, but here's one. Wow, that's good. Okay, so they have their system set up here in some way that it's not going to work, I'm afraid, because it works on my computer. Try this one. Okay. Check them out if you can on your computer. I don't know what the system computer is called, but I could do it on my laptop and show you, except then I have to log in my wireless anyway, so I don't know if it's worth taking the time to do that. But go ahead and play with those if you want. Okay. I have a heavy wheel that can rotate, and it is free to move in all three dimensions. The mechanical thing is sort of set up so that it can move freely in every direction. And you'll see that it sort of does, right, if I just move it around. But look what happens if I spin it up. Hands holding it. I'm now going to let it go. Now look what happens. It's not perfect because there's a little bit of friction. But you see, no matter how I orient it, my hand, that wheel stays oriented the direction it was to begin with. So this is the whole idea behind the parable. What this is. Why does the wheel stay the way that it is? In spite of so why does the wheel stay oriented to slowing down and ask for how can stay so oriented? No clue? Somebody. Anybody. Hello. Welcome to physics. This is physics 113. It's spinning. Therefore, it has angular momentum. And angular momentum is conserved. Right? So unless there's an external torque on this thing, it stays oriented. So that's the whole idea. So now imagine if I put this thing on a boat and this is in a box, okay, and I keep track every time the boat turns, the box turns relative to this thing. The boat goes this way, the box turns, but this thing stays fixed. If the boat goes down a big wave, or up a big wave. Okay? So if you can track the motion of this box or the boat relative to this thing as a function of time, you know exactly where you are if you knew where you were at the start. And that's the whole idea of navigating with gyroscopes, giving you the stability. They give you a fixed point of reference in a mechanical system. Because if you can isolate them. So this isn't the perfect gyroscope because there's a tiny bit of friction. So when you can create a mechanical thing like this that has no friction, then the gyroscope is really, really good. So on spacecraft, this is pretty critical. If you think about it, you can't really use GPS if you're on a spacecraft. If you go too far away from the Earth, then you're not. Okay, any thoughts, questions? Yes?
On a ship, like what happens if it slows down?
On a ship, if it slows down, the captain makes you walk the plank if you're a navigator. Now, in the old days, that would be a disaster, so they, you know, we carried more than one. And how good it was would tell you how close you could be to wherever you were trying to get to. So it could be a real disaster, actually. In the old days, you know, prior to this, I mean, if it was cloudy and they couldn't take readings of the stars, I mean, they'd get lost and people would die. And it's not a, it's a pretty serious thing. So nowadays, of course, they have GPS, but I think I would not go out in a boat, a real boat, out in the ocean that didn't have a backup mechanical system, probably, too.
Just in case their GPS receiver dies. Okay.
All right, so we've been talking a lot about rotation, and some of the equations we've used in the vector realm for rotation. As things rotate, we use the vector omega to define the plane of rotation, the orientation of the rotation, or the sense of it, clockwise and counterclockwise, and the magnitude of it, so it's very powerful. We get alpha with respect to omega because if omega is increasing, alpha is in the same direction as omega. If omega is decreasing, alpha is the opposite direction. And then we also have angular momentum, which is the linear analog you're used to is m times v, And the rotational analog would be the angular mass and the angular velocity, so I omega. And the angular momentum is in the same direction as omega. So, and torque we've defined, just as the F equals ma equation for rotation, torque is equal to R cross F. I'm sorry, this is the angular force, it's R cross F. Torque is equal to I alpha, sort of the F and people in ma equation. But when you're doing the vector thing, you really have to have a sense of what the direction of the torque is. So the other thing is that I take the derivative of this equation, then this becomes I alpha, so the derivative of the angular moment, of the angular momentum is equal to I d omega dt, or I alpha, which is the torque. And so we saw something very strange last time, which is if you spin up a wheel so that it has angular momentum, center of mass of the wheel is right here. There's a lever arm between the point where I plan to support it. And so the gravity will give it a torque. And it doesn't fall because that equation tells you it goes at right angles. I can tell you what we're believing. Oops. Thank goodness I've already had my kids. Alright, so this is just too weird, right? So it drops. Precession velocity, we call it. This is precession. The angular velocity of this thing going around is going to increase. And we're going to do the math for that in a few minutes. Just like a spinning top. And eventually, it will actually fall. Okay. So one thing to bear in mind when you're doing these problems is there are two angular velocities. One is this angular velocity, and that's what gives you the angular momentum. The other is this angular velocity, which is the precession velocity. And it is an angular velocity because it's going around. And that speed will depend on the size of the torque, the moment of inertia, and how fast this thing is spinning, and the size, you know. So it's going to depend on these other things. So we'll do a calculation and we'll off and calculate what that is. You have to bear in mind two separate angular velocity you have to worry about. How many of you know how to ride a bike? Okay. I don't know how you learned how to ride a bike. You were probably, many of you were probably, you know, wimps or training wheels or something. I took my little bike in the back. My parents were sort of, I don't know whether it was a generational thing, or the fact that I grew up sort of in the middle of nowhere, or whatever. My parents were sort of hand-off parents. You've heard of helicopter parents, mine were not. So I had this little bike, actually it was my brother's hand-me-down, couldn't do that whole thing. And I went into the backyard, and I hopped on it and tried to go, and I fell. So I hopped on it, I tried to go, and I fell. So I hopped on it, and I started moving a little bit, and I hopped on it as I was moving, and I fell. And so then I finally realized, okay, this isn't going to work. So I started running about as hard as I could, and I hopped on it, and I fell. But then I hopped on it doing that, and I got it. Okay? And when you learn how to ride a bike, it's sort of, you know how to ride a bike. But if you remember when you were learning how to ride a bike, when you started going fast, it became a lot easier to balance. In fact, it's still true, right? And it's really hard to balance a bicycle if it's not going fast or if it's just at rest. And it's all angular momentum. What I'm not showing you is that I'm fighting this stupid wheel when I'm spinning. I have to push. It wants to go. See, if I push this way, it goes up. I was pushing that way, right? If I pull this hand toward me, look what happens to it. If I push it, look what happens to it. And I'm not moving this hand, okay? So I'm fighting it all the time. So when you spin a bicycle up and you're riding, you have an angular momentum there. And it doesn't like to change. It only changes if you put the fork on. So, in fact, it's a lot easier to ride a bicycle and stay up when you have the wheel spinning very fast because the angular momentum is fixed. And in fact, have you ever noticed that when you turn a bike, you do this? You do this because you are literally going at an angle so that you supply a torque on the angular momentum of the wheel, and that causes the wheel to rotate that way. So this weird thing with precession, in fact, is something that you do every time you ride a bicycle. If you want to go this way, you lean this way, and the torque is on one side. If you want to go this way, you lean the other way, and the torque goes. And yeah, you turn the wheel too. The leaning is actually an important part of it. So rotational motion is all over the place. Angular momentum is conserved, momentum is I times omega. So when you are watching ice skaters, you note that when they go into the spins, their arms are extended because they have a large eye. When they pull their arms in, they have a lower eye, but L is fixed, so they have a much larger omega. So that's when they spin. If you're a diver and you can't, and you're trying to do somersaults, and you can't quite get that last half a spin or something, your coach is going to scream at you, tighten your tuck. So what they want is for you to tighten up your moment of inertia so you have smaller mass distribution relative to your axis of rotation, and then you will spin faster. So the dives that are really hard are the ones where they, you know, they do this stuff, and they don't. But the ones where they try to go for lots of spinning, they usually will pop a lot. So you see this kind of thing all over the place. Okay, so let us do a few problems to get the hang of this. Let's imagine that I have, a wheel with a hole in it. And I have another one . So I have an axis that passes through, and the axis is basically fixed on the lower wheel so that it spins with a sense that looks like that. So this piece is in front of the board, this piece is spinning so that that's going in back, and the right-hand side is going into the board, the left-hand side to you is coming out.
And let's say that it has an M and an R and an omega. And we have... So we say that the bottom one spins with omega, and it has a and we know that the moment of inertia of a disk, we look it up, or you're given, we'll say it's 1/2 mr squared. So then we take the second disk, so the top disk is not rotating. And let's say that it's identical, and that it falls, and when it falls, it immediately sticks to the bottom disc. And we'll say without slipping. What is the final omega?
How might you do this? What tools are at your disposal to even consider trying to figure this out?
So, one thing you might consider would be using conservation of energy,
where it's spinning in this way, you don't have any, you know, the spinning of this thing won't care at what height it is, so that you're not going to change its gravity. Your energy that's relevant to the spinning isn't going to change if you change the height of this in the plane that's rotating. So, yes, if I have a wheel and it's on the inclined plane and it rolls down the plane, then the speed and the gravitational momentum are connected. Then this problem is not. So you don't have to worry about that. But so really, you could imagine this is spinning, so I know its energy. I can now drop this thing on top of it, and if I have conservation of energy, then I might be able to figure something out. So one thing you might consider would be to take, to do that, we have 1/2 I omega squared, where this is I corresponds to a single disk. So this is 1/2 times I omega squared. And I'm going to call this final omega, I'm going to call it omega prime. Okay. Just so I have those two distinguished. So this, if we conserve kinetic energy, has to be equal to 1/2 times the I of the two disks. Times omega prime squared. Okay. So this is my energy inequality. This is what I start with. This is what I end with. What's wrong with this?
Are you missing, like, the friction?
Well, I've got almost infinite friction because when it clocks down at 6. What would be the linear analog of this? If I had a ball here, and I had a ball here that was coming and hit it, and they stuck together. Right? You couldn't use kinetic energy conservation. Why? Sorry? Because that's an inelastic collision. You lose energy in some way that you don't really know how to quantify due to the friction that sticks them together. And the same is true here. So this would be an example of a perfectly inelastic rotational collision, if you want to think of it that way. Okay? So just like with linear motion, we can't use conservation of energy if you have a situation where you don't know what to do with it. You don't know where the energy goes, in a sense. Or if it sticks together, it blows up. There's something like that. You can't use conservation of energy. So this actually doesn't work because this is an inelastic collision. So what you can do, So what you can do though is you can use conservation of angular momentum. So what we know is that L that we have to begin with is equal to L at the end. And just like with linear momentum, this is always going to be true, even if you have a collision that's inelastic. L is I omega, so we have that I times omega in magnitude has to be equal to I nu times omega prime. Or maybe I'll make that I prime. So the old I was 1/2 mr squared times omega is equal to the new I, which is 2 times 1/2 mr squared omega prime. So omega prime over omega is equal to 1/2 in this problem. So when this thing is spinning at omega, when this drops down and sticks, it spins at half the rate. Okay? Okay, so then I was going to tell you about gyroscopes, but I sort of already did. So I won't say much about that right now. What I'd like to do is to look at a precession problem. So get you started on trying to solve those. So let's suppose that we have a wheel that's spinning. Got an axis, and I'm going to say that the sense of the rotation is like that. So that what I've drawn is the thick part here on the left is what's spinning toward you. And this part is going into the void. Okay? So I'm trying to do this three-dimensional thing. We're going to have this axis is actually in the plane. And if I suppose that I have a normal force here
and a normal force here that are symmetrically placed. I have the MG will act in the center of mass of this thing, straight down. And I know that 2N is equal to MG just from Newton's translational third law, second law, whatever. So, this thing would then be stable. Okay, it's just spinning, and you're just supporting like this. It actually would be able to just, it would just sit there and spin. But now what I want to do is to imagine that I take this same thing, and now I remove this force. So now in this case, N is equal to MG. Right, because it has to not crash down through the floor translationally. I didn't pull it down far enough, did I? Sorry. And then we have the equation that the angular momentum is equal to I times omega, and that the torque is equal to the change in the angular momentum with respect to time. So what is the direction of the angular momentum?
What is the direction of the angular momentum of this thing? Is it going, raise your hand if you think it's going into the board, out of the board, to the left, you're right, sorry, to the right, up, down. There is no such thing as angular momentum. You guys are not very cooperative. We would have a whole lot more fun. If you think physics isn't fun, you have only yourselves to blame. Okay, it's actually a little bit true. If you just sit there, then my strange antics become a lot less strange. If you join in, then I probably get pretty weird up here. It'd be a lot more fun. Okay, how would you know which way the angular momentum goes? What way is omega going? How do you know which direction omega is going? You grab the axis with the right-hand rule, and when you curl your fingers in the direction of rotation, your thumb goes in the direction of omega. L is I omega. So L is always just in the direction of omega. Okay? If omega gets smaller, L gets smaller. If omega gets bigger, L is getting bigger. Okay? So, we have that the angular momentum is going that way. It's in the plane. Like so. Okay? What is the direction of the torque on this thing? In fact, what is its axis of rotation? How many of you think this is the axis of rotation? That is one axis of rotation. Certainly. The wheel is spinning around that. But notice that this is also a point you can consider an axis of rotation. So if I ask you a question about the angular momentum omega, I really am thinking about this as the axis of rotation. But if I look at this system and I ask, where is the torque? Then this has no torque about that spinning, because it's acting through the axis of rotation, if you will. Right? Through the center of mass. But I have a force here on the system. This is the support, and I have a force here. If I'm supporting it here, I can imagine that this is an axis, and this force is giving me a torque about that axis. So in this problem, you consider the torque about that point, and this is your vector r. R cross F would be fingers along r, curl it in the direction of F, it's going that way. Okay? What does this equation tell you is going to happen? If my angular momentum is like that, and I have a torque that's like this, this equation tells me that the angular momentum change with respect to time has to be in that direction. Not this way, but that way. Okay? So there is an angular velocity of rotation. As you look at it from above, you'll see the thing spinning like this with time. And we want to look at what speed that is.
How does that change on the ground?
I'm sorry?
How would that change when it's off the ground? You think we'll be able to go all the way? Negative 10 contact with the surface.
Okay, so I'm riding a bicycle toward you. Alright, that's the wheel you're seeing. When I lean this way, my center of gravity is to this side of the support. So if L is like that, the force that produces the torque is... Here's the center of my body, okay? L is going this way because I'm going toward you. Alright, now if I want to turn that way, I lean like this. When I lean like this, if you think of the bottom of the wheel, which is sort of what you're rotating around, I now have mg over here, the center of mass, okay? So I have r this way, from where it's supported at the bottom, along the ground, R cross NG, R cross NG is that way. I have angular momentum this way. It has to rotate in the direction of the torque, right? The torque is that way. If R is this way, MG is down. So torque is like that. Angular momentum is like that, which means when I lean this way, the angular momentum has to rotate like that, which it does, because I turn that way. If I lean this way, I have L like that. R is this way. MG is down. R cross F is a torque like that. So the angular momentum vector now has to go back like this, which it does, because I turn left when I lean to the left. That makes sense? You may not realize it on an airplane if you have a big propeller going. You then want to go down. So you use flaps to make the airplane nose dip, but when it does, it'll pull to one side or the other because of this strange thing. So you have to correct for that with other flaps. So it's just, it's really bizarre stuff. And it bothers me every time I teach it. It's really weird. Okay, so what I'd like to do is to imagine now we are looking at this wheel. I guess I'll just copy it. To here. So imagine that our eyeball is up here, okay, and we're looking at the wheel from above, okay? And when we do, what we will not exactly see, but what you can imagine is that you have L is like this, and we see that this thing is rotating into the board on the left-hand side, so it rotates like so, from our eye, as our eye looks at it from above. So if we look at it over a time, say dt, L rotates like that. You have sort of a dl here in dt. So you see the thing sort of rotating with that sense. The magnitude doesn't change. You still have L here. Now L is over there. The magnitude of L doesn't change. It does eventually slow down because of friction, but on the scale of this problem, you say it doesn't. So what we're going to say is that this thing rotates about an angle phi in dt of time. Well, or d phi. Okay, and we know that the torque is equal to dl over dt in magnitude. The torque in this problem is mg times r. That's equal to the torque, which is equal to dl over dt, which is the same thing as the magnitude of L times d phi over dt. You can sort of think of this vector as being the vector sum of these two, where you have a little dl and this is an L. And if you want to imagine L being sort of big on the scale of this circle, you can think of this as your arc length approximately. And this is sort of your d theta, or d phi, I'm sorry, I didn't expect the time. So this angle from S is equal to r theta, r in this triangle is L. And we say that we go this distance dl,
So this would be DL is equal to L D5. So DL is L D5. In a given amount of time. You can play with that. I don't know that it's really that important that you be super comfortable with that. It's a little bit of a hand-waving definition, derivation. But you should get sort of comfortable with it if you can. We're going to define this as big angle omega. I'm sorry. Instead of, not angle, this is the precession velocity. This wheel has little omega, which is equal to the angular velocity of the wheel rotation. The precession velocity is the speed with which this whole structure rotates about due to this weird phenomenon called precession due to the force. So mgr is equal to L times this new angular velocity, and L has a magnitude which is just I times omega. So you end up with mgr from the torque is equal to I omega times the precession velocity, or the precession velocity is equal to mgr over I omega. The torque that's relevant here is the total torque. So if you put an additional force on it, it will change the rotation accordingly. So what this would say, for example, is this precession velocity will increase if I have a bigger torque. It will decrease if omega is big. When I have this thing spinning up really fast, it doesn't rotate all that fast in the precession. But as the wheel rotation slows down, it starts to precess faster and faster. Just like the top does. Okay, so here it is. I'm going to push down very lightly on the tip of it as it comes about. Look what happens to the precession velocity. I don't know, could you tell? Let me do it this way. If I press down a little bit, it starts to spin this way faster. Is that visible? No? Alright, let me try this. Press down a little. I let up. I press down. It rotates a little faster. Okay, so what I'm doing is when I press down, I'm increasing the net torque on it so that you have the normal mgr, and then you would have whatever L force I'm putting on it, and its torque. And that term on the left increases, and so you'll get a bigger omega, a big omega. As the thing slows down, which I don't really want to let it do too much, it will precess. It precesses a lot faster. It precesses faster because this omega is now smaller, and so that spin that is the precession speed will increase. Now you gotta admit, that's sort of cool, right?
Here I am holding this wheel, rotating this way. Okay. If I now take this and do that, what direction is my stool going to spin? This way, this way, or not at all? It's initially spinning like this, like that. I now rotate it into this plane, and I want to know, is my stool going to turn, as you look at it from above, is it going to go clockwise, it could be like this, counterclockwise this way, or not at all? Think about that for a moment. Talk it over with your buddies if you want. B or C? All of you who think it's A, raise your hand. B. C. Alright, so we have an even split and one holdout for C. Okay, so let's see. Up there, and I want to rotate it so that the front is going in. Okay, so I am going clockwise. Why? Get you to be to the point where it's not complete random grade when I ask this question on the exam, right? So let's think about it. Spinning like this, what is the direction of omega?
Down.
Down. What is the direction of L? Down. L is fixed. Around this axis, I have conservation of angular momentum. When I move it this way, I am trying to reduce L, which is pointing down, which means my stool, the whole system, has to rotate to increase L, which is going down, in order to hold that constant. Okay? To do that, I have to rotate this entire body this way, because that gives me an L going down when I take the component of L out of the wheel. I basically have to add it back in by everything rotating. Okay? Alright. Here is a spinning top. Okay? What is the direction of omega? Where omega is the angular velocity vector for the top itself. Spinning like that. If you grasp the axis of rotation, your thumb will point along it going up. So omega is going like so. What is the direction of L? Is along omega.
was the direction of the torque. You're supported here. The net force is through the center mat. So there will be a force of gravity on this thing. I could produce the force in different ways. Most of these problems, they have it due to gravity, but I could give you some artificial force and just apply it at some point. This whole thing works in space just fine. So here we have mg. So what is the direction of the torque? Here's the point of support, so it's going to rotate basically about that point. So you could draw R this way if you want. You could draw it like that with the perpendicular component, because you're going to use the torque with the cross product, so that piece is important. But if this is R, for example, going from this point up to there, then R cross F is into the board. So the torque is into the board, and the top will now precess into the board. So the top will now spin, it will look like that as it spins around. Okay?
Can you explain the inch of the board again? Can you explain the inch of the board?
I want to know the direction of the torque, because torque is dl dt, so torque gives me the direction that L will change torque. So the torque at this point is always R cross F. In this case, R is this vector. These vectors are both in the plane of the board. So I put my fingers along R. Okay. F is now, I can move them around. So I have R this way. F is like this. Fingers along R, curl them into F. It's into the board. And if the torque is that way, L, the orientation of L is going to change in such a way that it goes that direction. Okay? It's a little harder to visualize if I have it rotating the other direction. If I have it rotating like that, now L would be down. It would be going like so. The torque is still into the board. And so now, visually, it's hard to imagine this L vector, because you think of it as rotating around the head of the vector. But what it means is that that vector has to rotate into the board, which happens effectively when the outer part of the top rotates out. So if this is spinning like this, the whole thing will move into the board. If this is spinning the other way, L is pointing the other way, and the whole thing will move out of the board. A little hard to visualize that way. Why? You're at this one. I think I'm down to look out for that. Weird stuff, huh? Any questions? All right, so it's a little hard to...
I'm talking at you, and I hope it's helpful, but of course, you know, this kind of thing... You sort of get to work the kinks out in your understanding by doing problems and workshops and stuff. So by all means, spend some time on this one. I would say the precession is probably the thing that typically, when I teach it in this class, or this 121 or whatever, is the thing students squeal about the most. It may even be an optional section in your book. I actually like to include it because it is so weird, and it makes the point that you really need the mathematics. The vectors are real, if you want to think of it that way.
Okay. Let's see what happens here. I have power to my laptop, but we have just lost the projector and this thing is frozen, so I can't even look for the other projector. All right, so clearly nobody wants us to finish class a little early, but I can do something conceptually first. Let's do the theory for static equilibrium. The whole next chapter we're going to do. And we're going to do all the theory right this minute, okay? Here I am. I am not translating this way, that way, this way. Why? From a physics point of view. The net forces on me are zero. In this direction, in this direction, and that may actually any direction you want. The net linear forces are zero. Why am I not rotating? My rotational forces sum to zero, otherwise I'd have an alpha. Right? So the sum of all the torques on me about any axis you want to choose is zero. If it wasn't zero, I would rotate. Okay? And you can certainly have something that rotates that has no translational motion. Right, if I spin a basketball on my finger, which I can't do, but if I could, and I had a basketball, and I spun it up, you could imagine it right here, spinning, but not actually moving translationally. Right? At the same time, you can take it, not spin it, and I can move it translationally, and then I can have a combination of the two. So, if you want something to remain in static equilibrium, you call it, that is, not move, then you want the sum of all the forces, the net sum of all the forces linearly at any given point to be zero, and you want the sum of all the net torques about any axis to be zero. So why do you care? Lots of reasons, I think, actually. But among them is, if the engineers who built this building don't know anything about static equilibrium, I wouldn't be sitting down here. Right? So it's all about me. Holding things steady is actually a pretty important thing to do. How do you know a bridge is going to not collapse? How do you know a building's going to stand up? You basically are doing nothing more than what I just said. So now, in years since I've used so I prepared this board here in advance. The right chalk. They don't even have the good chalk, I don't think. But here's a ladder. And we have a person standing on the ladder. Okay? What are the forces on this ladder? Yell them out.
Yeah. Its mass times gravity.
Okay, so the ladder has its mass times gravity, and the person has theirs. Okay? So the person's a little bit easy. I know where it is. It's So I have mass of the person times g.
What about the ladder? Where is this gravitational force acting?
Center mass.
This is where the center mass becomes really important. You say, well, there's mass everywhere. Yes, there is. But by symmetry, or if you're told, wherever the center of gravity is or the center of mass, you can imagine this big long body as being all that mass at one point. In a ladder, you know, you'll often get the words in the problem that says a uniform ladder. And in that case, if it's a uniform beam or a uniform ladder, what they're telling you is gravity you can think of as acting right at the midpoint. So the ladder might be of length L, and here I have mass of the ladder times g. Why do I care where I put that? Because I don't want the ladder to go anywhere. That's why we use the word static in this section. So it's static equilibrium. And I want to have the sum of the torques be zero. See, when we were just doing translational motion, I could be pretty glib about wherever I put these forces. It didn't matter because I'm summing up all the forces going up and down. And whether it's acting here or here or here, it wouldn't have mattered. But now imagine if I want to take the torques about this point. Now it really matters where I locate that force. If I locate it here, there's zero torque. If I locate it here, there's a lot of torque. Okay? So now all of a sudden the exact location of the forces actually matter. What other forces are on this thing?
Friction.
Where's friction?
At either end of the ladder. Where it touches the ground and whatever wall it's on.
Yeah. And you might not even really know what direction it goes in sometimes. So they may tell you. At the base, generally, it will go, I mean, you sort of can sense it's going to go that way. And you, in principle, could have friction on the ladder going this way, or possibly another direction, up, you know, down or up, whatever. So be on the lookout for the friction. If it tells you, usually the problem, if it's well worded, will say something like, it's up against a frictionless wall. And that then tells you this force you don't have to worry about. What other forces?
Normal
force. How many of them? Two. So we're going to have one here. And we're going to have one here. Those forces, the friction and the normal force there, are different from the friction and the normal force there. Okay? So if this thing is at static equilibrium, then I know that the sum of the vector forces is zero. That's a vector equation, so that means it's true in all directions. This direction doesn't matter in this problem. But what I know is that the sum of the forces this way has to be zero. So, in fact, I know that in force of the friction here minus that has to equal to zero, and you have to get the directions correct. So you have to watch the signs here. So those are the only forces this way. And then the forces this way also have to sum to zero. So that means that N plus this other force minus MLG minus MPG is equal to zero. That still allows the rotational degree of freedom, so we don't want to allow that. So we have to have the sum of the torques equal zero. And this is about any axis. Okay? We're going to say that this guy is located, say, 0.6 times the length of the ladder, and this being at the midpoint is going to be 0.5 times the length of the ladder, and we'll have the ladder a certain length, L. And now we have to sum torques. You can use any point you want. Often, one of the things you have to realize is the point where you choose to sum torques about, the lever arm to any force that passes through that point is zero, so it doesn't come into the torque sum. Once in a while, you'll find a problem where you can actually make the force go away by using that. But so I'm going to sum about this point. I'm going to define that kind of rotation as positive for my torques. I need more information. We're going to say this is at some angle theta. Okay? Because the torque then is going to be do it more carefully later. I calculate this distance and I multiply it by MLG, and that would be a torque that wants to rotate it this way, so that'd be a positive torque. I calculate this distance and I project this down here. This distance times that force gives me another torque that wants to rotate me this way. This distance here times that force is a torque that wants to rotate me that way. So that torque comes in negative. These two torques come in positive, and that gives me a third equation. Okay. And then, you know, the problem is whatever the problem is. We'll do one more formula. But it's often, for example, how far up can this person climb before the ladder begins to slip or something like that. And so basically you find the equations for static equilibrium, and then you look at the details of the problem to figure out how they constrain whatever it is this asking problem. Okay. So in that case, you would use the force of friction to be at its maximum value. It's not moving, so it would be the normal force times the mu sub s. And you would then see what solves for that. And then for that solution, the person is as high on the ladder as they can be. And if they go 1 millimeter higher, it slips. Okay. But we'll do examples later. Theoretically, this is trivial. It's actually not bad to do when you start doing problems, but you definitely want to do a few problems with the hang on. But anyway, it's one of the easier things. At this stage, of course,
I see it. I didn't even saw it.
Yeah.
Okay.